Well, good morning, church. I wonder if I might begin with a personal word this morning. A crazy thing has happened. I wrote a book, and it's going to be go live tomorrow, believe it or not. It's called Easy Stroll Through a Short Gospel. I wrote it, I promise. And it's Meditations on the Gospel of Mark. It's about something I'm really passionate about, and that is the power of God's Word, reading God's Word for ourselves to change our lives. And so think of this book as kind of me sitting with you as you read through a whole gospel, the Gospel of Mark, and the life-transforming power of Jesus. And so I wanted to just say a couple of things about that. One is, you may not be aware of this, but for many years, leaders at this church, my bosses, if you will, have really encouraged me to write and to kind of use that gift. And this book, I know, would not be a reality without that encouragement. And so I just wanted to publicly say how grateful I am for them. It's pretty cool when your bosses want the best out of you and want to see you develop all of your gifts. And then the second thing that I would say is, I don't know if you know this, but you could actually get your Christmas shopping done really early. And that's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say about that. Marketing invades the pulpit for just a second. But now we're gonna get back to this series that Amy launched for us last week, Hope on the Horizon. We sang a moment ago, O come, Emmanuel. We put ourselves in the place of those Old Testament believers who were waiting for the Messiah, waiting for Jesus to come. But we sing it today, grateful for the coming of Emmanuel, grateful for the coming of Christ, but waiting for the second coming of Emmanuel, waiting for Jesus to come again. And we believe it is that hope on the horizon, the second coming of Christ, that fills us with strength. And we think, as someone has said, that hope is a muscle, that hope keeps us moving, sometimes through hard times, sometimes through suffering. Hope keeps us moving forward. Last week, Amy talked about hope for a happy ending. This week, we want to talk about hope for renewal. And so I invite you to have our passage open in front of you. It's from the second to last chapter of the Bible, Revelation chapter 21. There are a lot of really challenging things, a lot of painful things, as we'll talk about in a moment, that happen in the book of Revelation. But when you get to chapter 21 and chapter 22, it's mostly smooth sailing. And so we're going to read beginning in verse 5, and we'll read through verse 14. Hear the word of the Lord. He who was seated on the throne said, I am making everything new. Then he said, write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. He said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty I will give water without cost from the spring of the water of life. To those who are victorious will inherit all this, and I will be their God and they will be my children. But the cowardly, the unbelieving, the vile, the murderers, the sexually immoral, those who practice magic arts, the idolaters and all liars, they will be consigned to the fiery lake of burning sulfur. This is the second death. One of the angels who had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues came and said to me, come, and I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb. And he carried me away in the spirit to a mountain great and high and showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. It shone with the glory of God, and its brilliance was like that of a very precious jewel, like a jasper, clear as crystal. It had a great high wall with 12 gates and with 12 angels at the gates. On the gates were written the names of the 12 tribes of Israel. There were 3 gates on the east, 3 on the north, 3 on the south, and 3 on the west. The wall of the city had 12 foundations, and on them were the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. May God bless the reading of his word. One of my old instructors, Daryl Johnson, wrote a book called Discipleship on the Edge. It's a book about, his book is about the book of Revelation. And he tells a story in this book about some seminary students who love to play basketball at a high school gym on a weeknight. And they kind of struck this deal with a janitor who would keep the gym open so that they could play. And sometimes the janitor would read their books or their Bibles that they brought with them. And one day after they played, one of the seminary students saw this janitor, and he had his Bible open, and he said, hey, what are you reading? And the janitor said, I'm reading the book of Revelation. And the seminary student had just heard one of his professors the previous week said, nobody really knows all that's going on in Revelation. And so he asked the janitor, he said, well, do you understand what you're reading? And the janitor said, oh, yes. And the seminary student thought, well, this will be good. Well, so tell me, what is the meaning of the book of Revelation? And he said, the janitor kind of looked to the left, looked to the right, leaned over and whispered into his ear, the meaning of the book of Revelation is that Jesus is going to win. That's what he said. Daryl Johnson says if the janitor maybe had read it a second time or a third time, he might slightly alter that conclusion. He might say that the meaning of Revelation is that Jesus has already won. And boy, don't we need that word of hope today. Don't we need to hear Jesus say to us what he says in verse 5 of Revelation chapter 21. Now, I don't know if you know this, but Revelation 21, 5 is a special verse to us. Anybody think of any reason why Revelation 21, verse 5 might be a special verse to us? Anybody? It's right back there. That's right. Behold, I am making all things new. He who is seated on the throne said, I am making everything new. Every time I have the privilege of baptizing somebody, I think about that, the newness, the renewal that comes through Jesus Christ. We need this promise, the promise of verse 5. And the reason we need this promise is because we live in a world where it is as if some dark force says to us, behold, I make all things old. We live in a world of suffering and pain and decay, and the message we hear, if all we listen to is the world around us, the message that we hear is, behold, I make things old. The current news, this won't be a surprise to any of us, but the current news of life as we live it is we live in a world where things break. We live in a world where things break. You probably didn't have to come to church to learn that truth. You probably already knew that for yourself, but it's reinforced in our passage today. We live in a world where things break. We live in a world where before Christmas Day is over, that brand new sought-after toy is already broken. And a child is sobbing. Have you ever experienced that before? That's where we live. We live in a world where things are fragile. We live in a world where things break. I think that's one of the most holy and one of the most painful parts of doing life together as a people of God is being with one another when things break. You know, our grow groups have prayer lists, and sometimes somebody will forward me a prayer list to see some specific information about something to be praying about. And usually when I look at one of those emailed prayer lists, there are things to celebrate. You know, somebody got engaged or somebody's job interview went well or this or that. But almost always there are broken things on that prayer list as well. You know, there are things that have not gone right. There's suffering. There is pain. And we as the people of God come around one another, support one another when things break. I remember a few weeks back where it rained for like 75 days straight. Anybody remember that little period? It seems like around the staff table, we, you know, oftentimes more urgent prayer requests come to the staff table. And it seems like we were praying for four different families that had experienced car wrecks in that week. We live in a world where things break. We live in a world of suffering. I think about friends of mine in this church, many around my age, who've just lost a second parent. And you know, many of them, they're doing well, they're in good health, they've got their kids around them, some of them have their grandkids around them, and yet they say to me, Larry, as old as I am, I feel like a little orphan. Because we live in a world where things break. We live in a world where no matter how hard we try to build these tall, invisible walls around our homes to protect our children, that some enemy somehow scales the wall and penetrates and causes harm. And if that's true in 2018, if that's true in a somewhat cozy suburban community in Dallas, Texas, in the United States, you can't imagine how true that was for the original readers of Revelation. The book of Revelation probably written somewhere in the mid-90s AD. At that time, there was an emperor who was not a nice guy. The most powerful man in the world, the Roman emperor, was named Domitian. And he decided that he was a deity. He had people call him the everlasting king. That was his title that he had for himself. And there were actually temples, shrines, built to the emperor Domitian. And if you were a Roman citizen, it was your requirement to go into one of these shrines, into one of these temples, burn a little incense, and then say in front of everybody your worship, your liturgy, to say that Caesar is Lord. And interestingly enough, many of the faithful Christians were viewed as atheists because they refused to say Caesar is Lord. They were non-believers. They didn't believe in the divinity of Caesar. And because of that, many lost their life. Or like John, the apostle of Jesus, now an old man, was banished as a punishment to the island of Patmos, where he wrote this book. You don't have to read very long in this chapter, chapter 21, to see how many things can break. Even as the chapters I mentioned, that's mostly about hope and mostly about good news, we still, when we read the lines in between the lines, we see the pain and suffering going on behind this book that John wrote. We read about thirst in verse 6, to the thirsty. We read those who are victorious will inherit all this. And so obviously there is a battle going on. We read in verse 8 about the enemies of God. We read about the cowardly and unbelieving and people who commit all kinds of violence and who turn away from God and the sorcery and idolatry, and we read about their destiny. We live in a world of suffering. We live in a world that's a battle. We live in a world where people think so often they are losing and they're thirsty. They are hungry for victory. We live in a world where consciences break. We live in a world where moral codes break. We live among the shards. We live among the fragments of a broken world. My first ministry job, I was 19. I was a youth minister. I was barely older. In fact, I had some of my youth were actually older than me in my youth group, and which is another story. But I lived in this little duplex, which was right across the street from the pastor's home, the parsonage, which was right across the street from the First Baptist Church of that little small town. And I didn't have a whole lot to do, to be honest with you. You know, it was like Friday nights, play volleyball, Sunday, teach Sunday school. But so I spent a lot of my time over at the pastor's house and just kind of hanging out with their two elementary age boys. And this younger boy, Jody, he was what my grandfather would call a ringtail tutor. I don't know what that means exactly, but he was quite challenging. And so I was hanging out with them one day. Their mom was at work. Their dad was over in the church. And Jody's mom collected these glass turtles. And so Jody goes over and he takes these glass turtles off of the shelf. And he goes over to a coffee table and he begins to like put them on their backs and spin them like they're tops. And I'm like, hey, Jody, you shouldn't do that. Jody. And as I'm talking to him, one of the turtle's heads hits the other turtle's torso, and that little glass turtle head just flew completely off the body and landed on the floor. At which point, little Jody had a Damascus Road experience, and he just began to like start screaming like, oh, mom's going to kill me, you know. And then he goes, where's the super glue? And I don't know what meanness came over me, but I said, let me call your mom. I bet she knows where the super glue is. And he goes, no, you know, and he kind of dives toward me, you know. But that's the world we live in, right? We live in a world where we're careless. We live in a world where we're careless with valuable things. We live in a world where we are fragile. We live in a world where we are vulnerable. And we live in a world where things break. If all we listen to is what we hear in the world, we will hear a dark force say, behold, I make all things broken, aged, decayed. And so the question for people of faith is there a possibility of renewal? And that's why I'm so grateful for this text, because I think the heart of this text tells us not the current news, but the future news. And the future news is that God puts broken things back together. That's the gospel. That's the good news of this text. Jesus says, I make everything new. In fact, I love the way he says it. In verse 5, he says, I make everything new. And then he says, write this down. I like that. Like you don't want to miss this, John. Write this down. These words are trustworthy and true. I've heard somebody say one time, whenever you read the Bible, you ought to have a pen or pencil in your hand, because you never know what God's going to reveal, so that you can kind of write it down. And Jesus says to John, write this down. And he begins to say, it is done. On the cross, he said, it is finished. Now he says, it is done. Suffering is over. Pain is over. Tears are over. It is done. And if you had the nerve to say to him, well, who are you to say that? He would say, I'll tell you who I am. I'm the Alpha. I'm the first letter of the Greek alphabet. I was here before it all got started. I'm the Omega. I'm the last letter of the Greek alphabet. I'm the one still standing when all my enemies are in the burning lake of sulfur. I'm the Alpha. I'm the Omega. I am King. I sit on the throne and I make all things new. He even says that there's this, it's kind of like Ponce de Leon. There's this eternal spring of water. He says in verse 6, to the thirsty, I will give water without cost. Get this, from the spring of the water of life, eternal refreshment. And it's almost like we're here, John's there, John's seeing it all, and he's trying to explain it to us. He's trying to explain what this renewed world looks like. And we say, John, what's it like? And the first thing he says is, I'll tell you what it's like. I'll tell you what I see. What I'm seeing right now is I'm seeing a royal wedding. A royal wedding. Verse 9. One of the seven angels who'd had some tough jobs. This angel had before kind of carried bowls of judgment during the seven last plagues. But now he has a hopeful job. That angel says to John, come, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb. Back one or two chapters earlier in chapter 19, we heard about the wedding of the Lamb. We heard how the bride would be adorned in clean linen, which symbolizes the holiness and righteousness of Christ. And now the bride, the church, is going to be in this forever marriage with Christ, the bridegroom. That's what it's like. That's what renewal is like. Sometimes you hear couples who've been married a while, they say, well, I guess the honeymoon is over. And sometimes they're joking, and sometimes they're not. And in the history of Israel with God, sometimes it seemed like the honeymoon was over. Sometimes it seemed like Israel had just completely turned its back on God. But one day all that faithlessness will be forgiven and healed. One day the people of God will be in a forever relationship, a forever marriage with Jesus. What's it like? It's like a royal wedding. It's like a royal marriage. Then John says, I'll tell you what else it's like. You know what it's like? This renewed vision that I'm seeing of what the world's going to be like, this future news. He says it's like living in a brand new city. Living in a brand new, special city. In verse 10, I think we have biblical evidence of a holy hovercraft. Because look what verse 10 says. It's, and then he carried me away in the spirit. He carried me away in the spirit to a mountain great and high and showed me not just any city, the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. What a vision. What a vision to see that. You know, a lot of us have kind of love-hate relationships with our hometowns or the cities that we consider home. You know, for some of us, we're frustrated with maybe the city we grew up in. For some of us, we long for that city that we grew up in, maybe somewhere in between. I can remember Jalita and I moved from Dallas in 1993 to Atlanta, and it was the two of us and a four-week-old baby boy, and there were so many things to love about Atlanta. You could get sweet tea at any restaurant that you went to, and it was beautiful, and there were mountains just to the north of us, and we loved Atlanta, but man, did I miss Dallas. Dallas is not my hometown, but it's kind of the center of my cultural universe, and the Cowboys won two of their three 90s Super Bowls while I was in exile living in Atlanta, and I missed chips and salsa, I missed fajitas, I missed Texas barbecue, which I call barbecue, and I can remember I used to, this is when the internet was just a pup, I would have friends of mine, if I knew they were going through DFW, I would have them buy me a Sunday Dallas Morning News, and maybe 3 days, 4 days, a week later, I would read, you know, week-old news, and I'd read through the sports page because I missed this city so much. And so thank you very much, Valley Ranch Baptist Church, 1999, giving me a job so that I could come back to the city that I love so much. And yet, you know what? Even as much as I missed Dallas, there were some things that I'd forgotten about, like 635. I'd forgotten all about that. And Central Expressway. I'd forgotten about July, actually. in Dallas. And so we do that, right? With our cities that we love, we have this maybe love, sometimes hate relationship. We have this imperfect relationship. But if you think I had it bad for Dallas back in the 1990s, you can't imagine the ache that Old Testament folk felt when they were separated from Jerusalem. There's this Psalm 137. It's written by an exile, someone who lived in Jerusalem. When Jerusalem was destroyed, they were captured. They were taken to Babylon. Some of their Babylonian soldiers, the captors, are saying, hey, sing us some of those old Jerusalem songs. You're so crazy about Jerusalem. Sing us some of those old songs. And in Psalm 137, the psalmist says, if I forget you, Jerusalem, may my right hand forget its skill, not be able to play its instrument. May my tongue cling to the roof of my mouth if I do not remember you, if I do not consider Jerusalem, get this, my highest joy. Now that's love for a city. So imagine if that's you, right? If that's you and you love with all your heart earthly Jerusalem, imagine what John is telling us. Because John is telling us that he doesn't see earthly Jerusalem coming down. He sees the new Jerusalem. He sees the holy city beautifully restored. Verse 11 says it's shining with the glory of God. It's like a precious jewel that you'd see under glass at a jeweler's. It's like jasper. It's like crystal. And guess what? If you've ever been afraid of that enemy scaling your wall, this new city is going to be protected. Not that there's going to be enemies to worry about anymore, but this new city is going to have these impossibly high walls that no enemy could scale. It's going to have gates, get this, open north, south, east, and west. In other words, people from all over the globe are going to be able to enter in a truly international city of people who believe in Jesus Christ. It's going to reflect our Old Testament heritage. The different gates, the 12 gates, will have the names of the 12 tribes. It's going to reflect our New Testament foundations. All the foundations are going to have the names of the apostles on them. Right? And that's our future. Friends, if you belong to Jesus Christ, that's your future. A holy city is waiting for you, a perfect city is waiting for you. And so while we endure the potholes of this life, we can see the hope on the horizon. And that can give us joy. I talked to a man out in the lobby after the first service in a walker. He told me he was in his 90s. He said, I was saved when I was 20 and followed Jesus for over 70 years. And he says, I'm ready to see him. Good news, hope on the horizon. You sang about it so passionately, Mama, when we all get to heaven. What a day of rejoicing. When we all see Jesus. I mean, is there any vision greater than that, as you sang? But I want to tell you before we're done that not only is this future news strength for us in the midst of our current news, but I want to share with you kind of like a breaking news ticker. I want to offer you some breaking news this morning. Because some of you are saying, oh, I can't wait till then. I'm struggling right now. What do I do with my pain right now? And the breaking news of this passage and the word of the New Testament is that God's renewal process has already started. It's already begun. Jesus says, behold, I am making all things new. Christ's renewal project starts now. I think this is really fascinating. We all know that our bodies age, right? We all know that. But did you know that our souls grow young? The souls that are renewed by Christ, they grow strong, not weak. They grow young, not old. I think if you've ever known an old saint, an older person who really follows Jesus, you find a joy and an innocence and a delight and a power in their soul that you don't see in a young saint usually. Why? It's the truth of 2 Corinthians 4:16. Some of you have already been studying this verse. 2 Corinthians 4:16 says, therefore, we do not lose heart, though outwardly, our bodies, we are wasting away, yet inwardly, we are being renewed day by day. Our knees get creakier? Yes. Our joints get stiffer? Yes. Our cars depreciate as soon as we drive them off the lot? Yes. That's the world we live in. But our souls are being renewed. Our souls are getting younger. Our souls are getting healthier. Our souls are getting stronger. I wonder if this is a word, you know, Jesus says to John, write this down. You know, I wonder if this is a word that you need to literally write down this morning. Because I wonder if somebody maybe here has already called time of death on something in your life. You know how they do that in a hospital room? Someone will call out the official time of death. Maybe some of you, kind of right now, 11:50 a.m., December 2nd, 2018, you've called time of death on something. Some aspect of hope, maybe some relationship, maybe some aspect of your calling, and you've just decided it's gone. You've just decided that died. And I wonder, I don't know, I'm not God, but I wonder if God is saying, I want to do a work of renewal right now. Right now. You know, by the way, this is not good news that we just want to, that happened in the first service too, by the way. It's our bad, you know, it's our bad. But I just wonder, you know, this is not news we want to keep to ourselves. I mean, you know people that they know things break. They know things decay. They're very familiar with that. But they do not yet know the one who makes all things new. And maybe as you're just investing in that friendship, someone maybe far from God or far from God's people, maybe just even thinking about how your invitation of them to one of our candlelight services, December 23rd and 24th, maybe that could be just a little introduction, just a little glimpse into the one who makes all things new. So, I wonder if you've ever heard this phrase, Dr. Livingston, I presume. Anybody ever heard that before, Dr. Livingston, I presume? It's actually a line from a story of a medical missionary in the 1800s. His name was David Livingstone, and he wanted to go and go to China and be a medical missionary there, but God had other plans, and he ended up in Africa, and that wasn't on his first top choice of what he wanted to do, and it was difficult, and there was tribal violence, and he went through a lot of pain, and he went through a lot of suffering, and he was really hopeless one day, and he was reading his Bible in kind of an atmosphere of hopelessness. And he was reading at the end of Matthew's gospel, you know, that kind of write this down moment. He has this moment where he's reading Jesus say the last words he speaks before he ascends to heaven. He says, "Lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." And here this physician in the 1800s from the United Kingdom, he reads that and he says, "Jesus is giving me the word of a gentleman. And a gentleman does not break his word. A gentleman is a person of honor. And Jesus has said to me, David Livingstone, I am with you always, even until the end of the age." And David Livingstone marked that moment as a moment of spiritual renewal. And he began to cling to that promise. Whatever happens, God is with me. And as he went through pain and suffering, as he watched his wife pass away, as he himself became ill, he clung tenaciously to that promise of renewal. The one who makes all things new will never leave me. He is with me always, even until the end of the age. When he was in his last days on earth, there were actually a team of African men who loved him, and they actually took turns staying up all night. They had different shifts to watch him. And wouldn't you know it, the guy with the last watch of the night fell asleep. And when he woke up, he saw that David Livingstone had passed away on his knees, leaning up against a tree. He died clinging to his hope. He died trusting the one who never leaves us in our hopelessness and decay. And I wonder what he saw when he woke up. This morning, we learned that one of our saints passed away very suddenly last night, Babe Renfro. And it's been hard to preach this morning. Just thinking about that, and one of the things that I will miss is Babe coming up to me in her walker after church on Sunday with a huge smile, huge blessing. But I was just thinking about this. One of the things that I prayed with Babe about more than anything else over the last few months was her hearing. It was such a difficult thing for her not to be able to hear clearly, and we prayed a lot about that. And I just wonder, I just wonder what she heard. I wonder the first words she heard. Maybe it was an old and familiar voice saying to her, "Behold, I am making all things new."